This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Everybody, thank you so much for joining me on a show that Nate, John, Nim, and I at Empathy have been thinking about called the Empathy Hour. My favorite part of the name of the show is it's not going to be an hour because of my schedule. But this is where we talk a little bit about wine, a little bit about the concept of empathy in the workplace or the world, and then also get to know my my partner in drinking the empathy wine. And today's partner and the first one is Jamie. And I would love for you to introduce yourself to the audience. So why don't I give you the floor for a minute, and then we'll go into the wine, and then we'll talk about empathy overall. But thank you for being the first person on the show.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
Of course.
It's an honor.
Thank you.
My name is Jamie Schmidt, most known for starting the business Schmidt's Naturals. It's a personal care products company I started in my kitchen back in 2010. Started mostly as a hobby. I was pregnant at the time and paying closer attention to the products I was using on my skin. And realized I needed something natural. I was also very broke, so DIYing everything I could. I was living in Portland, Oregon. Cheers, by the way. Yeah. The most creative city in the country.
I love Portland.
Yeah, it was a perfect place to start a business. So it started for fun.
Did you know that you need a new product because your skin was acting differently during your pregnancy, or because you were like really went to that place of like anything even touching your body, you were worried about the product seeping into the baby?
Yeah, I was a hippie back then. You know, close attention to everything I was eating, putting on my skin. But yeah, it's more about like the absorption.
By the way, I apologize. You just said something that I'm paying a ton of attention to.
What's that?
So I have this big concept of called purple in my head.
Okay.
So obviously America has gotten very red and blue. You know, very red and blue in its politics. And I'm like, man, if we could just all like get into purple, have a little of this, a little of that, we become so polarizing. And you just said I was a hippie back then. I have so many friends who are incredibly thoughtful about health and wellness, who I've been noticing over the last 12 months are going into purple. I've seen a lot of my friends who, for example, were like insane vegan, now start to, like, I'm just seeing the world. I feel like we've just gone through 5 to 10 years where the world was getting more to the other sides. And I'm just seeing something where people are like, you know what? It's maybe okay if I do this thing that I religiously said I wouldn't.
Totally.
And I see it in food and health and just life. I'm starting to see it. And so when you just said that, I was like, the way you said it really triggered me in a good way. Like, it means we're always evolving. And I think that people dug themselves into that identity of like, I'm this.
Right.
About this.
100%.
And I'm seeing people get a little purple. Yes, no?
No, I agree with you. And there's also this like kind of transition from like creator, artist, maker into entrepreneur, right? And so like a lot of these people start out as like this sort of, you know, for lack of a better word, hippie, right?
Or artist, right?
Right, totally. And so now we're like, you know, emerging into these professionals.
And do you think that's, when you say that, do you think that's like, okay, I'm ideological about something. And then when I get into operating, you're like, wait a minute, this isn't evil. This is, if you don't do this, it won't be.
Right.
Yeah. Operations.
No, totally.
Practical.
And not every artist or maker, creator can handle operations, right? Like some are like, just keep me in the creative side. But then others like thrive there and they don't realize until they're deep into the business.
Well, I would tell you I'm an operator. And I would say that as an entrepreneur, I associate more as an art. Like I actually see the art in operating.
Yeah, totally. I hear that for sure.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think, would you consider yourself like type A, kind of like black and white thinker?
I don't know. I'm looking at all my team. I don't know. I would say I have both in me, right?
Yeah. I'd say mostly black and white.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's me too. But it's like this, I think that's kind of key when we do start as artists, but then we're expected to like really take on the operational piece. It's like you have to be able to kind of switch between both. But then maybe that's the gray area too.
What's funny, I feel like in my career, especially with my NFT project, VeeFriends, where I'm really leaning into my creative side, back to your point, mostly, right? Like I think I suppressed, not suppressed, because I found the art in operations and black and white, I was content. But like wine was my first career and like there was a lot of art in it, right? Like the wine business is incredibly romantic, incredibly creative, incredibly artistic by nature. Then I went into advertising, which also has that element. So yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you will, I mean, listen, given my audience, your story is like, whew, so good. So like you go from, you know, Portland, you know, this thing, like this, I'm just going to go a little bit off script here just because I want to give it to my audience. What was the breakthrough moment? Because there's many breakthrough moments.
Right.
But what was the first breakthrough moment for the business?
I'd say when I was out at the farmers markets and just hearing customers tell me that the product changed their lives. You know, it started for
fun. You sensed that there was something there?
Yeah, totally. And they were coming back for more and just like telling me these really intimate personal stories about their experience with deodorant, of all things. That's the product we were most known for, and that really, you know, kind of disrupted the industry, was our natural deodorant. But they had this whole history of like all the deodorants they tried, and some had, you know, bad reactions to their body chemistry, or just didn't work, or didn't feel right. And Schmidt's changed that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. And so fast forward 7 years, had an acquisition offer by Unilever.
Yes.
So the company had scaled. I actually kept operations, manufacturing in-house. Never outsourced it
yes.
until the very end, which was crazy. If you think about like growing from your stovetop to managing this team of like, you know, 150 employees across two shifts, like with an assembly line, like somehow I figured out how to do it all. And
good for you.
But when you believe in what you're doing, it happens, right?
It's
fun.
You
figure it out.
100%.
Yeah.
And so that was obviously life changing.
Yes, it was. I had started from very humble roots, bootstrapped the whole thing. And it was a life-changing amount of money. That was back in 2017, and I thought for a moment, maybe I'm done. Maybe it's time to retire, drink some empathy wine. But then other opportunities kind of started to pique my interest.
Good for you. Let's actually segue here for a little bit into empathy wine, and I want to talk about what you learned using empathy, or if you did even, because I think it's a fun question, because I think people evolve in when you were running it, maybe even in the transition, even empathy for the acquirer of your business. There's some interesting stuff there for people listening. But let's talk about this. What is your wine journey?
Yeah.
If anything.
Well, it started with,
Boone's Farm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Strawberry Hill.
I love it. You know how popular that is?
Oh my God.
Especially in the 70s and 80s,
yeah.
It was a monster product.
Yeah.
Like a monster product.
Right.
Then it became a cult. Now it's a cult product.
Oh, totally. Worst hangover. But in college.
It's the sugar. There's so much sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but you were like a Boone's Farm.
Oh, yeah. Whatever I could get for cheap in college.
Of course.
Bribed the person at the corner store to buy for me.
Right.
And then from there, I upgraded to boxed wine. Mm-hmm. and then started to take a little more interest as I got a little older. But, you know, it's all.
Portland must have been an impact, right?
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, like Pinot Noir.
Pinos, yeah. Yes. And that's when I started to think, okay, this could be interesting. I can start, you know, paying attention to what I'm buying and start to remember things that I like.
Where would you rank yourself right now, like from. Like snobby expert all the way to like completely nothing. Like where do you think you are now?
I'd like to say snobby expert just given how much I drink, but I'm not. Like I don't, first of all, my memory is terrible. I can't remember things, like names of things, but I know.
What about visually? Like do you see the label and you're like, oh, that's the one with the dog on it.
Yes. But I also like to make space for other drinks. I like beers and I like some cocktails.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Listen, I think it's fun to integrate empathy into these shows, but like this is not an infomercial. Like I want, you don't need to, like, don't worry. I want to talk about the subject matter of empathy while I drink empathy because I think it's meta and
totally.
Funny. Plus I want to see Nate or John once in a while because I haven't seen them in 3 years. But this is actually let's just go there.
Yeah.
Today, if you know, we became friends. I'm like, what kind of girl are you? Like, are you a bourbon girl? Are you a beer girl? Are you a sparkling water? Like, where are you in beverage consumption right now?
Okay.
Break down that pie for me.
Within the last week, Manhattan's with my family in Michigan, who I just turned on to NFTs and Web3 for the first time.
I love it.
So, yeah.
So Manhattan's right now.
Right now. But yes. I do like my wine. So my favorite wines are natural wines.
Yeah, of course.
Consider getting into that?
Of course. I consider. Yeah. You're talking to somebody that considers getting into everything,
yeah,
always,
true.
Of anything, about everything. So I'm very
much. You can call it purple.
Yes. We could. Trust me, I've thought about that a lot. What about historically?
Yeah.
If I asked you, in the history of your life, I'll use myself as an example to help you answer this question. In the history of beverage consumption that you recall, what was the height of obsession? For me, it was Nantucket Nectar's half and half, you know, Arnold Palmer iced tea lemonade. I used to somewhere in like junior year of high school to freshman year of college in that 2 year window, there were times where I drank like four of them a day. I drank a lot of sugar, super hyped up.
My moment of becoming a casual drinker?
Yeah, in the history of your life.
Yeah.
If somebody asked me that question, I'd say, 93 to 95, Nantucket Nectar's half and half was the beverage that most captured my soul ever. I want everybody in the crew, Nate, I want everybody to answer this. We'll start with you, James. In the history of your life, what were you most addicted to?
Well, I'd have to say in high school, cheap Milwaukee's best.
Beast.
That's nice. Where it all started.
Beast. We would, you love the Beast?
We would hide it in the ditches from one weekend to the next and because you couldn't bring it home because your parents would know. Anyway, but the turning point, the real turning point, I think it's when I started to appreciate whiskeys and bourbons.
Good for you, brown goods.
Where I didn't need a mixer. Yep. I didn't need any more sugar.
Right, you were like, this is
just
delicious.
Thing in a beautiful glass.
Rocks.
Like one,
rocks or no?
One ice cube, yeah, depending.
Nate, in the history of time, like milk when you were seven.
Beverage alcohol perspective. From a beverage alcohol perspective.
No, no, not alcohol. Beverage. Like maybe you were really looking to lose weight, you know, and you drank water for a year. Like okay. I want everybody to really go here with me. Right. Beverage obsession for a moment in time. Because you know how it is. It's like moments in time.
Grape Propel.
Grape Propel.
Yeah.
When?
Probably like early high school.
Very interesting.
When I was like my peak of my athleticism. Got
you.
Thought I needed my electrolytes.
Yes.
Got you.
Probably Snapple.
I love Snapple.
And then Capri Sun a bunch, and then those tall 99 cent Arizona.
I understand. Yes. All the same neighborhood, but I'm going to need you to pick one, my friend.
let's go Capri Sun.
Capri Sun. Yeah. What grades or age?
Probably fifth, like ages 5 to 10.
Five to 10.
Like camp memories.
Got it.
When I was in elementary school, I really liked the Dell's lemonade.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
That's really good.
So that's the one.
Yeah, probably fifth or sixth grade.
Seth?
Elementary school, middle school, and high school, 2% milk.
Ah,
just straight to the face.
So
I didn't know it was a weird thing.
It's not weird.
Yeah, it is.
Were you already into like, you thought it was good for your, like you were going for muscles and bones?
No, just like my parents would give me milk. I'd be like, cool, this tastes good.
Cold?
Cold.
Cold.
Dust?
I think it was when Vita Coco first was like.
Oh, Vita Coco.
Yeah, like around, I was like.
Got you. Obsessed with it. Yeah, I love it. From a wine standpoint, Nate, this 2021 rosé is like really coming along.
Then you'll be the first people to taste it. Really? Shipping it soon. Give you the breakdown if you'd like. Yeah.
We're capturing Nate in the background. It's good. Go ahead.
So most of the fruit here is from Lodi.
Yep.
62% Pinot Noir.
Yes.
26% Grenache. 6% Syrah. And a sneaky 5% Muscat.
You know, I like a good 5. You know what's funny? You can, the nose, you guys did that for, like the aromatics are crazy.
Yep.
It's, yeah, that's the one thing about the natural wines is you don't get the smell.
No.
They don't smell good.
Aromatic? Like, yeah, I mean, I like it because they get a little funky.
Yeah, times. I love, the funkier the better.
Yeah.
For sure.
But, I mean, look, I think grape has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
The year.
Yeah.
The warmer, like there's a lot that goes into it. Nate, I really like the 21.
21's good. Good. The vintage was good across the board. Low yields, high concentration.
Good acidity.
Yeah.
Nice shot.
What made you decide to name it Anthony?
Well, that's a good segue. Let's segue into that for this point. Like, actually, real quick, what is your, like if you were to, like, describe this wine, I'm just curious. What do you think? Yeah, do your thing. Just curious.
So I did, college, I had a wine tasting class. It was part of my hospitality business degree. And so we went through all the, like, technicalities of the legs and
the body.
This one's got, doesn't have the best legs.
But we don't really?
Need,
look.
We don't need legs.
Look.
Do it.
I have a lot of legs.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I wasn't in the good light. if I had to describe it, let's see. I think it's sweet, but balanced, not like annoyingly sweet.
Yeah, it's a dry wine with so much fruit that it gives you that. This is what you always look for in rosé and white wines in general that I think most people like. This is fully dry,
right?
But has so much fruit that you'll go with sweet and what a wine nerd like Nate will say is like, oh, these are strawberries because strawberries are naturally sweet,
right?
But it's not like it's sugar.
Yeah, it's a good like daytime wine, I think.
Do you know what's so weird? I've been using wine as a hunger suppressant during COVID.
Okay.
Like there was a bunch of, I did a lot of fasting during, so it's not true fasting the way we just did that podcast because it's alcohol, but like if I didn't want to have solid foods, I did it 2 nights ago. And actually I am now, because I don't even want those calories, I'm trying to use sparkling water.
Yeah.
Sparkling water really fucking works,
well,
right?
That's all I was gonna say is the sparkling wines.
Keeps you like not hungry all day. Yeah.
I can drink sparkling water. Like I can go from the morning till 7:30 p.m. without having any hunger. So I never eat lunch or breakfast. I go the whole day, as you guys know.
Yeah.
When I want to lose weight, and like, because I love fasting, like I just feel so good the next day, or light, I've used wine at time, the empty stomach thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that, I do that a lot. But, and sparkling water when I don't even want those 150 calories. All right, empathy. I am really proud of this. if you go look at the Google Trends, when we named empathy, the word wasn't really like popping. Okay. There wasn't like the kind of, like now, given, you know, when you have political tense realities, I think a lot of people have tried to lean into empathy. It's become a more pop culture word.
Yeah.
But I have been thinking about empathy for a long time. I have, in my early 20s, I would talk about sympathy, compassion, and empathy in like a trifecta of like why I was happy with my friends.
Yeah.
It's because I never knew how to look at situations without putting the other person first.
That's awesome.
Which is so much of what works for me as a human being. Mm-hmm. For a million reasons. Business, life, content, happiness, peace of mind.
Right.
But what I was a really bad student, so I didn't even really know the slight variation differences of empathy, sympathy, and compassion. And you know,
make it best too.
Yeah, I just didn't really know like the definition that the world thought of it. I just thought of it as like caring about the other person. Yeah. Is kind of how I used to talk about it. And then, you know, I really educated myself through Google documentaries and social media content over the last 15 years. Like I would tell you my parents and siblings kind of joke with me of like not even understanding how I got to this vocabulary that I have. Because
I
like
always think about that.
You do?
Yeah, I'm like, how the fuck did he come up with this word?
Right. We're in a world where I'm supposed and I use unusual words because I'm a little bit of a character, like whether it's uncanny or I get into things, right? Yeah. I'm moose boosh, right? Like right? Yeah. So I fell in love with the word empathy probably about 15 years ago of like, oh, that's, you know, I love leaning into sympathy. And as a matter of fact, sympathy has become a big thing for me because mm-hmm. I think the world needs to have a new conversation around letting people grieve.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot about that. I think we're very quick to be like, no, it's going to be okay. Or your mom's looking down at, like, we're not giving people, like, we're so quick to want someone to be happy because we love them mm-hmm. that we're not giving breathing room for grieving.
Yeah.
Been thinking a lot about that, which has led me to sympathy in a way that I haven't been in my whole life. But I got to empathy pretty quickly when I started Googling the definitions in 2003, 4, 5, 7. I was like, wait a minute, that is what I do. It's empathy. Like, and I also always felt that I was ahead of trends or a good salesman because of empathy. Because it translates in my mind of genuinely feeling what you're feeling. So for business purposes, if I know exactly what you're feeling, well, then I know exactly how to sell you something, right? But even much more powerful, and I'm grateful for, if I know how you're feeling, I can really deploy conversation that can make you sense that I'm feeling what you're feeling, which then can connect us.
Yeah, I love that. And I think sometimes empathy has this connotation of like sadness or like...
Yeah, I don't see it that way.
But it's sympathy, I think, emotion, yeah. Right?
Like correct.
Empathizing with whatever state you
correct.
Are in right now,
yeah. As a matter of fact, as someone who probably has had to work on candor and being comfortable with conflict, mm-hmm. my empathy, to your point, was often around the positive.
Right. Okay,
like you're pumped about this and I can feel that you're pumped about this and let's do this. Like it was kind of momentum.
Right.
I've always thought of empathy and momentum in similar places back to your point. Anyway, I wanted people to care about people. I still do. My entire NFT project, Be Friends, is built on that. It's where I'm starting to feel an association with Sesame Street like I've never been before as I'm building my thing. And so when we started, Nate and our third partner, John, do you remember when I named it? I felt like I gave you the name. I think I baked it in my head before I sat you guys and said, let's start a brand and call it Empathy and it's going to be wine and let's do this.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a discussion.
Yeah, well, it was definitely not a three-person committee.
Not that like, it was just like, that was it.
Yeah.
You're like, I made up my mind.
I was like, if we make this big, when we make this big, the word will just get bigger and that's good for the world. And that's how we named it.
I love it. And the logo, like a little heart with exclamation.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's really interesting. That is actually how I sign my books when I sign books.
Yeah, okay.
Like, because I never wanted to just have my signature, but because the lines got bigger as my career groomed, I was like, wait a minute. Because my first book, when there was like 13 people at the book signing, I would write like, what's your name, Ronald? Dear Ronald, you are the greatest man I've ever, like I would write like, and then sign it. And then as my career evolved, I'm like, man, I still don't want to be that person that just signs it.
Yeah.
So I kind of got to this little logo. The other thing we thought a lot about and why I think it happened, I know how wines are built. And I think that the farmer who makes the wine and the consumer who buys it, mm-hmm. are the two people I care the most about. Yeah. So I thought if we can be a wine in the middle, if we're the most empathetic to the farmers,
nice.
Right? Yeah. The people that take the risk, the soul of it,
right.
That we buy the grapes from, and we're the most empathetic to the consumer. Let's make, our thesis was always, let's make a $40 wine for 20 bucks.
Yeah.
Let's make a $40 wine for 20 bucks. Well, then we're gonna build the biggest company in the world. And so that's how it all kind of came together.
I think a lot about like empathy for yourself too, which I think it's overlooked a lot, right?
Like, well, now you're talking about a subject matter that I'm really digging into, which is, oh, right, I love myself so much. That's why I'm able to give so much love to everybody else.
Oh,
of
yeah.
course, these person, that person, they can't, they don't love themselves. How the fuck are they gonna muster right. up love for someone else?
Right, it's like cutting yourself some slack. I feel like self-empathy is so freaking important, especially as entrepreneurs, right? Like we're so concerned about keeping our team happy and our customers and everybody in the community, but then we like forget about like empathizing with our own emotions and where we're at. And so I like it. That's
what was the hardest thing for you as you went into an entrepreneurial journey? You worked at Vayner for a long time with me on my really close to me always. And then we started this company. Mm-hmm. If you know, and then we sold the company and you work at Constellation. Like, if you know, when you talk to your future family and they're like, "Dad, you were a entrepreneur there for in that period." Like, what was the hardest part? What do you think it was?
The hardest part for me was probably the details of running a business.
Yeah.
Like the high level. Like, I know we need to do this. We need to do this. We need to do this. Like that stuff. Like, we're gonna get it done eventually somehow. But the details are like, oh, I need to set up health insurance for people that I hire. Oh, I need to do
the mundane ops.
Ops. Oh, I need to make sure that this particular, like, I get our COGS right so I can file taxes and my shipping reports and like
cost of goods sold for everybody who's wondering what COGS is.
Like all these like 50 different details that popped up that without running a business you don't really know existed overnight.
Yeah.
And so trying to figure that out was like,
how about for you?
Well, I'm walking into this, I was thinking a lot about the word empathy and how it's, you know, resonated throughout my entrepreneurial experience. And I think a lot about my team and how I changed as a leader, and just this need for like me to meet my team where they were at as I was changing, and them to also step it up and understand that I've changed. And like, I don't know if that makes sense. But
it makes
like
a lot of sense. It leads to the question, how do you rate yourself on ambition?
Ambition? I'd probably say 10 out of 10.
Right.
I mean,
so
I cut myself breaks.
No,
things,
but by the way, the reason I asked that, and I'm so glad you answered the way I thought you would answer, back to him. I think that's the biggest challenge for somebody who's got great intent.
Yeah.
Until someone goes, something very great happened to me. Mm-hmm. I basically thought I was running my family business when I was 14 the day I walked in.
Yeah.
So by the time I was 22 and actually ran it, I was a veteran.
Right.
There's not any, there's, unless you grow up in that environment, mm-hmm. nobody's 22 and ready to run shit.
Right. No one's 40 and ready to run shit.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So for me, by the time I was 25, it became very clear to me that my ambition mm-hmm. was the number one thing I needed to balance with my empathy.
Yeah. Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that takes time for a lot of, like, when you're kind of on your journey, especially if you start your journey late.
Mm-hmm.
If you start your journey, for example, at 37, you've been working for somebody else for 15 years. So you're saying, I'm doing this for me and my family now. Yeah. Who's on the other side of that? Your employees. Right. You've had 15 years of pent up, I'm finally ready to do it for me. But your employees haven't been on that journey.
Right.
But you as the human are stuck in that feeling. And that's where there can be some real conflict.
Yeah. Right. Because you think you're starting your business because you want to work for yourself and you know, make all the decisions. But then you have this whole team that you have to keep happy too and answer to. And
That line right there, if you asked me out of this entire interview, mm-hmm. what was the line that most gave me the clearest picture to why you won?
Yeah.
Was you just said employees mm-hmm. and you said answer to.
Yeah.
I believe the singular reason people fail in their entrepreneurial mm-hmm. journey is that they believe employees work for them instead of they work for their employees. I believe it is the binary perspective
and
that undermines entrepreneurs.
That's so good. And it's shifted with Web3 now too, because your team, I tweeted this yesterday, your team is your community, but your community is also your team. And so it's just...
Web3 is in a very... Yeah. Long term, I agree with you. My biggest concern about Web3 and NFT land right now is 98% of the makeup of communities mm-hmm. care about the finances.
Yeah. I agree. And so that's why
to me, it doesn't feel like a community.
Yes.
It feels like people that want to make money. And by the way, I'm a capitalist entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge that, But I think founders of NFT projects have to be very careful of listening to their community.
Yeah.
Because their community's interest is in their ability to make short-term money.
Right. And that's where you and I think, have the privilege of starting these projects from, you know, a place of financial security. 100%. And so we don't have that motivating us as much. It's more like
the problem is, you know, most people that have financial success mm-hmm. aren't doing things then or now for the financial success. They want to be successful at what they're doing.
Right.
And when you're trained into listening to the customer because you care, mm-hmm. the data can be very cloudy because nobody has ever walked into a world where your consumer
right.
is predominantly financially interested. Like when you sell wine mm-hmm. or deodorant or serve it, like the people buying it aren't buying it for the sake of making money.
Right.
There's yes. a very big difference between somebody who's buying baseball cards
yes.
and buying bananas.
Yes.
The person about to buy his baseball cards and telling Topps and Panini what to do wants them to do that so that their baseball cards will be worth more money.
Right.
The person who's buying a banana from Chiquita wants to eat it.
Totally. And then the person the entrepreneur or the project leader or founder has a different obligation to their community or their customers too once that transaction happens.
My entire job right now in VFriends yeah. is to appreciate every comment mm-hmm. and listen to none.
Yeah. Sorry.
It is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Empathy is hard.
It is.
Entrepreneurship is hard. Everything's hard. Right. Or it's easy. It just depends on how you decide
yeah.
to look at it.
Right.
Like what?
Life would be boring without.
Yeah, and what I tell all my friends in their toughest moments is back to being empathetic to yourself. And it's my favorite line. And what? You're gonna go out of business? And then what? Go get a job.
Right.
It's like this whole concept of making anything that happens around business. Mm-hmm. Anywhere close to serious is a massive mistake of society. Mm-hmm. And what? So you lost. Your NFT project didn't do well. Your new startup didn't do well.
Right.
Great. Yeah. It's a war story when you're 70 and be like, remember when I've said that a couple times. So like, because I do so many things that I tell the team, I'm like, sometimes when there's like a more serious conversation, I'm like, guys, gals, like when this is over, one of two things are gonna happen. One, I'm gonna be like, told you I'm a genius, or two, we're gonna make fun of me.
Yes.
And both are fine.
Right. Well, and everything is just a step to the next thing, right? And people talk about like career transformation, how they wanna like revamp themselves or restart their career. Yes, but I also think that like everything they've been through is just a step. It's an extension, it's just like a evolution.
There is no waste.
You don't have to change.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Jim, thanks for being on our show.
Thank you, I enjoyed it.